Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that co-host shouting, it's Daner and Jay.
All right, today's episode of Hear That Podcast Ground is brought to you by Visa, a network working for everyone. Paulina Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic here working for you. How we doing, Jay?
Doing well. You know, this is actually maybe a week where I'm a little jealous of you. I'm happy that my kids are grown, but you get close to Christmas time and you really start missing those moments. And I just wonder if at your house, is this week kind of like that hour before a boxing match in Vegas where you can just feel the energy, feel the excitement? Is it, are your girls just bouncing off the walls?
I haven't been to a boxing match in Vegas in a while, but I do believe Vegas is filled with lots of emotions and people crying in gutters occasionally and highs. And like, so in that respect, yeah, it's a roller coaster. You know, it's from moment to moment, you never know if you're going to be hitting the jackpot or, you know, going back to the ATM practically speaking. So, yeah, in that respect, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Just like before a big prize fight. No, it is. There's a lot of excitement we've seen. I got it. At my daughter's daycare, they brought Santa and Mrs. Claus in, and I had the first experience in dealing with this question at dinner last night, and that was, why did Santa's beard have a strap on it? And I'm like, can we get a Santa with a better setup? Can we get one with a real beard? Can we not? It's a daycare. It's full of nothing but impressionable young kids, and yet we can't get the one where they all see the strap on Santa's beard. And I have to answer to this.
All right, even the supply chain is affecting Santa.
supply chain issue. I love my daycare. I love everything about the daycare that I send my girls to. But I need a Santa that doesn't have the strap showing, so I don't have to talk about this and try to work my way around these questions. We've got a lot to get to. Got a lot to yesterday on the live room. Thanks for everybody for coming in and answering and asking questions there. They were great. I'm looking into Fear the Tiger, and we're going to see if we can find out what Bootsy's doing and see if there's any way to get a recreation of that for a 2021 version. I think that's it was a great way to end the episode, and I'm still working on it, which will continue to include a trip to Fretboard to just drink Bootsy beer and think about it. That is up on the site. In case you didn't see it on the feed, you can go on there and listen to that episode now. So a lot of good stuff that we covered yesterday. Got some news to get to, and we're going to really dive into the playoff picture, where it sits after the Browns loss and the wild card and the North and what some of the numbers are saying and the size of this Sunday's game against the Ravens, in case you didn't already understand the enormity of it. We've got all of that. I want to really dive into that. We're going to bring in our good friend Mo Egger from ESPN 1530 to talk about, you know, really what the true takeaway from Sunday's game should be. And a tweet that I loved his approach to a big news story this week. And, you know, I'll leave it at that. I won't go any further. Just I really liked it. And drop that on him. And so that, and we'll recap Growler Bet and run passer boot and all of those things that we like to do. Let's start with news, Jay. Joe Bachy tore his ACL yesterday in Denver, so he is out. So the linebacker room is dangerously thin, but it's been dangerously thin, so I don't know what we would call it now. Busted up. I mean, that you still Jermaine Pratt is just one man holding the pieces together at this point. I mean, So here's where you're going to – Logan Wilson will not – is not expected to play on Sunday. They took a chance not putting him in IR with the idea that in that third week he might be able to come back in an optimistic timeline and play against the Ravens. And the idea of how important that could be was worth the risk of that last roster spot. Well, that blows up in their face, and Wilson's not going to be able to go. So they burned the roster spot for nothing. But – I don't know how much of a difference it made. Either way, with Bocci now out, you are talking about Marcus Bailey and Jermaine Pratt as your starters, with some combination of Austin Calitro, Clay Johnston, and Keandre Jones sprinkled in as backups. And I'm going to guess that most of you don't know who any of those people are.
You know, I thought Marcus Bailey played fairly well, and when I asked Zach about him yesterday, it wasn't exactly a ringing endorsement, but I've been high on that guy since they drafted him. They took him in the seventh round. He's probably a second round pick if he doesn't tear his ACL at the end of his last year at Purdue. And you know, he kind of had that redshirt year his first year and had trouble getting on the field last year. I'm really interested to see how he's going to play. He's got all the physical tools, and you know, he's got Jermaine Pratt running the show. He just has to go out there and react. But you're right. It is dangerously thin there. And the one thing I will say about the Logan Wilson thing, there's a lot of angst on Twitter about that. Obviously, they don't have a crystal ball. They took a gamble. It didn't pay off. I do wonder if they had that roster spot 2 weeks ago, if Trent Irwin is returning punts instead of Darius Phillips, it may have cost them a win.
It's a great point. It's a great point. If that is actually, because there was a lot of talk about how tough it was to pull off the roster that week.
Yeah.
And that's a big reason why Darius was up. You're right about that. So we'll see. Wilson potentially could be back. Maybe now you're aiming more at week 18 against the Browns or whatever, because it didn't. You know, the fact that they're already not really giving him any hope to play this weekend suggests that you're looking at the longer end of that timeline. Browns playoffs potentially on Logan Wilson. Either way, Jermaine Pratt has played fairly well. PFF didn't think so. They had him as the lowest graded defensive player, but you know, I don't know. That's not what my eyes told me. And honestly, I've watched a lot of bad linebacker play in my lifetime covering this team, and I don't think he necessarily was that yesterday. I kind of talked a little bit about that yesterday in the live room, but he's really kind of holding that room together. And Al Golden, I mean, the guys do keep coming in. These, you know, Joe Bachy came in and played well. Anybody that's kind of stepped in there has held it up enough that they haven't been killed by it. So they're going to hope that Marcus Bailey can be the latest in that line. Joe Mixon's injury was dubbed an encouraging and an ankle. I don't know what to make of those. These early week positive, optimistic diagnoses don't always turn out well. At the end, we've heard similar things on Trey Hopkins and Riley Reiff over the course of these last month or so, and so I don't know for sure if we'll see Mixon back this weekend or not. We might. It's better than hearing, you know, he's going on IR or something like that.
I will say, and you're right. This things can feel different the day after a game, but I went down early to make sure I was in the postgame press conference, and I saw Joe walk down the tunnel with his teammates, no limp, not going slow. He was walking at his normal pace. So that at least was an encouraging sign that it wasn't something that was bothering him right then. But you know, you get the adrenaline going, a big win. You don't know how it's going to go, but Zach did sound pretty encouraged that they would limit him early in the week. And yeah, you feel they're going to need him against Baltimore. And the linebacker, too, the linebacker situation. I mean, if there's one opponent you don't want to be weak at linebacker for, it's Baltimore, especially if Lamar Jackson's back.
Yeah, we saw them survive it against San Francisco, another team that puts a lot of stress on your linebackers. And so we'll see how they come out of that one. Khalid Kareem has a concussion. He's in the protocol. We know what that means. I mean, that typically means you're going to miss a week. So we'll see if he returns. Kim Adeniji has an ankle. Seemed to be some optimism around him just being limited during the week and see if he comes back. Obviously, if not, I think you'd see Jackson Carmen slide into that role again, if unless they think that they could potentially would want to bring back Xavier Suofilo off of, I don't know. The bottom line is I think there's a good chance Adeniji comes back, but that's another one that we'll be tracking during the week. As far as injuries go, that's really it. And I would offer perspective to go ahead and take a peek at the Baltimore Ravens projected opening day starting 22 from the preseason if you want to know what it's like to truly feel banged up and debilitated, or watch any of the Browns game last night and know what it looks like. The Bengals are the healthiest team in the division, one of the healthiest teams in the league still, despite the late rash of injuries that we've seen. All their weapons are still out there, and I do think it's making a difference. Perspective is important right now as we dive into the playoffs. I mean, Bengals are 8-6. They are in first place in the AFC North on December 21st, the start of winter. And that typically means draft talk and like people talking about should they lose on purpose. And all these bad things it's been, and now here they are in a year that I don't think anybody thought they would be in this spot, with sitting in the driver's seat in the AFC North with arguably the biggest game in this stadium's recent history since the last time they played a playoff game there. This is what you asked for. It's what you wanted. It's what you hoped for, and they've got it. And you know, I do think there's something to be said for the fact they've gotten themselves to this point, regardless of how they finish.
Yeah, and just, I mean, aside from what it would mean in the standings and kind of bearing Baltimore, but you're right. Everybody thought next year was going to be the year where the playoff window really opens. Just the psychological advantage. If they sweep Pittsburgh and Baltimore this year, and you know this team has some of the most cap space in the league, and you're still going to have Joe Burrow on a rookie contract next year. I mean, that really set, if that, forget about what it does with the playoff picture this year, that really sets a tone going forward into next year. But I was playing around with the playoff machine and trying to see, I mean, they have, I wouldn't say it's a long shot. Now it comes down to winning out, but it's not a crazy thought to think they could get to the number one seed.
Is it though?
I mean,
they obviously at that point you're beating the Chiefs and you're bringing them down a notch.
Right. The thing is, three of their six losses were to NFC teams. And that first tiebreaker, if it's not head to head, where if it is head to head and you're counting winning out, then you've got it against Kansas City. But they've got a big advantage in conference record. So if it ends up in one of those three-way ties for the best record, they're in great shape there. And all these teams, there's not a playoff team that has kind of a cushy schedule. You can see in most cases, Kansas City's going to have to lose two. Everybody else is going to have to pretty much lose one. And you could see it happening. Now, the longest odds are the Bengals winning out. Because I think it's equally as likely that they go 3-0 and 0-3. I could see it going either way. If they lose this Baltimore game, and then they've got Kansas City, and then you're on a two-game losing streak again going into Cleveland. Cleveland's got everything to play for. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be 2-1, 1-2. But if I was ranking the odds, I would say there's an equal chance for 3-0 as there is for 0-3.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Okay, let's dive into these odds. Let's talk about what this looks like right now. Here's how big this game is. So I kind of took a peek and started playing around at 538. And currently, they have the Bengals odds at 50% to make the playoffs and 38% to win the division. Now, here's how that changes depending on this weekend's result. Lose to the Ravens and you're 24% to make the playoffs and 10% to win the division. Beat the Ravens, you are 78% to make the playoffs and 71% to win the division. A 61% leverage gap. Now, this is under an assumption that I plugged in, that the Browns, in whatever capacity, they're still a functioning team on a short week, lose at Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. They will be heavy dogs there. They are heavy dogs there. And that the Steelers lose at Kansas City. They'll be heavy dogs. They are heavy dogs there. I don't think that's a wild thought. I mean, you put the Ravens out. I mean, you essentially put the Ravens out. I mean, there's always a chance they could come up off the deck. But here's the schedule of these four teams. You know, the Ravens go Bengals, then they have to play the Rams at home and the Steelers. So they would have their – even if the Ravens win this week, they have their work cut out for them with the Rams. The Steelers got to go to the Chiefs this week. And then you're going to have kind of an elimination game between the Browns and Steelers in week 17. One of those teams is going to eliminate the other one. Then obviously Bengals, Browns that week, Ravens, Steelers that week. You know, that there's just going to, it's going to continue to knock itself out. I think 9 wins does it. I think 9 wins is going to be enough in the division just because of how much these teams are going to knock each other out. And that's under an assumption, you know, that the Bengals could beat the Ravens, or really, I guess it depends on how it goes. But I think 9 wins might be enough. Now, you need to, but it really all kind of does come back to this one.
I think 9 could be enough if it's the Bengals and they beat the Ravens, because that's going to put them at 4-1 in the division. I still think the division champ's going to have 10. Somebody's going to win 2 of the last 3. Well, if it's Pittsburgh, then that only puts them at 9. But it's funny you said, you know, that you can knock out Baltimore by beating them. Right now, they're out. They're the 8 seed right now. So you would basically lock them out. They're already on the outside looking in. The thing, too, about that, what I was talking about with the conference record, where I don't think you're going to see, like we saw Denver make that huge drop after their loss. And then we see the Browns. They could have been the 4 seed if the Raiders don't make that field goal at the end of the game. Instead, they're the 12. I don't think you're going to, if the Bengals lose, I don't think you're going to see them fall that far because of their conference record, which obviously it'll go to 6-4 as opposed to 6-3 right now. But they just feel like opponents aside, they've got the better path. They've got 2 of 3 at home. They've got the better conference record. Yes, they have control of their own destiny, but it also feels like it's just there for them to take.
And I've seen some people talk about, well, what? Let's talk about Pittsburgh, right? I mean, they got to go to the Chiefs. They got this damn tie that takes all the tiebreak. I just don't understand how they're still here. And a credit to Mike Tomlin. This is the same year as the Duck Hodges or whatever year. I mean, it's like, how is he doing it? And this is how you end up a guy that's never had a losing record. Because it just, no matter what, he does seem to find a way. And I mean, them beating the Titans this past week, you get they did it by getting 4 turnovers when they hardly had any offense or running game or anything, is remarkable. So people will, you know, say, well, worried about 9-7-1 Pittsburgh, right? Worried about that being the difference. I'll only say this. If you're worried about Pittsburgh, don't forget, because you have Browns and Steelers in Week 17, essentially an elimination game, if Pittsburgh wins to put themselves in that position, the Browns will probably have nothing to play for in Week 18. They will be eliminated. And that team has had all the inkling to be one that the moment they're eliminating, the ship is going to sink fast. Think Bengals Ravens week 17 last year. Okay. A team with zero interest in doing anything other than hitting the offseason. If the Bengals go up there and the Browns have nothing to play for, they IR. And they've got all these guys at the COVID list and the guys that are playing hurt and Baker Mayfield's shoulder. I mean, you may see Nick Mullins again. Like, you know, I just think you're going to see a Browns team that'll look pretty similar probably to the one that they just fielded last night against the Raiders, which was a massive result.
If that
the Browns
happened,
are still very much in it, though. But that, I mean, yeah. I just, you got to keep that in mind if you're worried about the Steelers, that what that would mean for the Bengals week 18 opponent.
If that happens and the Browns are out of it, the First Energy Stadium could look like what we've seen Paul Brown Stadium look like the last few years. I could see a lot of Bengal fans going up there and getting cheap tickets and kind of taking over that stadium and having a chance to clinch a playoff berth. And I don't know that it's going to get to that, but I was going to ask too, because who's the middle game that the Steelers have? They've got the Chiefs this week and they wrap with the Ravens.
Browns. Who's the Steelers? Browns. Steelers, it's going to be a cage match, basically.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you get those two teams against each other, and whoever loses that. I don't know. They can change this dynamic a lot if they can pull off an upset. I mean, if the Browns can go into Green Bay on Christmas and beat Aaron Rodgers, or the Steelers can go into Kansas City and upset the streaking Chiefs. I just don't think either team is equipped to do either of those things. Although I didn't think the Ravens were equipped with Tyler Huntley to beat the Packers, and I'll be God, they were right there at the end with a chance to do so. So never count anything out. And in the league where the Lions beat the Cardinals, I don't know that anybody should be ever counting anything. And so there's a long way to go still, but that doesn't change the fact of, you know, this really feels like the fulcrum game for the Bengals this Sunday. We've pointed to it for a month. It has always felt like this was going to be the big one to really grab the entire division by the throat. It doesn't put it away. It wouldn't end anything. But when you consider who the other teams are playing, the challenge that they have, the fact that the Bengals have the Chiefs next week, and the uphill battle that game will be, puts even that much more importance on Sunday. I want to bring in one thing. Zach Taylor was sort of asked about the enormity of this game and what that means to the message that you sent. And I thought it was sort of interesting. You know, there's a real embracing of it and a real honest embracing of this game is bigger than the other ones and understanding the playoff picture and openly discussing it. Here's Zach Taylor on Monday talking about how big this one is.
Does this feel more important? And do you want your team to embrace that it's a big, important game?
Yeah. Yeah. Because time's running out. You know, it's there's only so many games left and we understand that. And we understand the importance of Baltimore's right there with us, you know, and at the end of the season, they very well could have the same record we do. And so not splitting with them and having a 2-0 lead on them and it is a big deal. You know, we've got it on Pittsburgh right now. We really need it on Baltimore. And so, again, this game would matter no matter who we're playing against. We need to get as many wins as possible here. That's the only way we can control our own destiny. But certainly to be 2-0 against Baltimore would be a big deal for us.
I thought that was, you know, very honest, and there's no reason not to be. But I always wonder why coaches are. You know, a lot of coaches just get stuck in coach speak and can't really do anything other than say, "Oh, another game. We're just gonna do what we do." Yada yada. But I thought that was a little different. The other thing is, once we get beyond the division here, and you can start the wild card, I just think is a much tougher fight right now. I think when you look at the 8-6s. So the Ravens are 8-6, obviously. We discussed them. But here's the other 3 8-6s along with the Bengals filling those last 3 wild card spots. You have the Colts, who are on fire. I think the Colts are one of the most dangerous teams in football right now. And I think they're as much a contender in the AFC as anyone, not named Kansas City. And they go to Arizona this week, who's going to be mad off the Detroit game, but who knows what's going on there? Was it DeAndre Hopkins and other injuries that have them down? Or are they, was that just a hiccup against a bad team? I don't know, but they'll be mad. After that, Raiders at Jags. I mean, the Colts could run the table. They're good. And they could flip the Titans, right? And end up still taking that division. That's not out of the question. How about the Chargers? We saw them here a couple of weeks ago. They go to the Texans. They play the Broncos at their place and go to the Raiders. That's not some gauntlet. You got to feel they're winning 2 out of 3 to get to 10. The Bills, huge one this week against the Patriots at the Patriots, right? After that, Falcons, Jets. Both in Buffalo. They're probably winning 2 out of 3. They're getting to 10. So if you're not winning this division, you need to be getting to 10 somehow. So, you know, I think it comes down to that. I mean, and that's why even more signs point to this Ravens game, because thinking you could flub here and find a way to do something and snag a wild card, I think that's going to be a tough one for you when you consider the schedule and how well some of these other teams are playing. I don't think the Bills are very good. I think if you look at their schedule and who they've beaten, they haven't played well against decent teams. They've kind of just beaten up on bad ones. And, you know, the Bucs game, they had to come from way back and almost won, but they still lost. So for me, again, I just think all signs point to the North. That's just all it is to it. That's where it goes through.
Yeah, as good as the Bengals record is in the conference right now, there's two teams ahead of them, New England and Indianapolis. New England's 7-2, Indy's 7-3. So if there is a big log jam for those three wild card spots, they are going to have an advantage based on their conference record. That's assuming it's a 10 and 7 log jam. The thing that also is encouraging, because they do have that loss to the Chargers, when you're looking at a division champ and there's a multi-team tie, head-to-head comes into play. It's just whoever has the best winning percentage among those teams. When it's for a wild card, the only way head-to-head comes in is if one team beat all the other teams they're tied with. So if it's a 3-team tie, 4-team tie, one team has to have swept everybody else to win that tiebreaker. Otherwise, it goes to conference record. And that's the Bengals are going to have an advantage there. The better chance is to win the division, but I don't think it's that far out of the question for them to get in a wild card, because they are so well positioned with that 6-3 conference record right now.
But they'll need 10. And if they get to 10, they're winning the division.
Unless they lose to Baltimore this week.
I guess that's possible. If Baltimore catches fire that way. Yeah. I mean, if they get to 10, they're in. I think that in some way. I don't see this being a year that a 10-win team is left out. And maybe I eat my words on that, but I just don't see that. Especially when you, like you said, they do have advantages in the conference record. They get to 10, it's over. They're in. Mm-hmm. They're going to play somewhere. And if you're them, they probably prefer a road game, considering the way they've played on the road as opposed to at home. But that said, I mean – it all just starts with winning these division games, and they kind of feel like they're built for that. It's just it's still a big mess. There's still a long way to go, but there's just no way around the fact that this just feels like the one they got to have. Just feels like the one they absolutely got to have.
And because of that, I'm really interested to see what the crowd's going to look like, because it was I was surprised how few people were there for San Francisco. I wonder, with it being the day after Christmas, maybe people are asking for Bengals tickets for Christmas. It's going to be such a huge game. It's going to be really interesting to see, you know, because they say all the time, you got to win. You got to win before people show up. Well, they're winning, and they basically will unofficially win the AFC North if they can beat Baltimore on Sunday. And I just am really interested to see how many open seats there's going to be at that stadium, because they talk about it all the time. They're going to need the crowd's help. And I think a lot of people take that week off between Christmas and New Year's. They'll have Monday not to go to work. I think that would be really big if they could fill that stadium on Sunday.
There's going to be a lot of empty seats. There are. There are. There has been. There will be. Yeah, that's fine. You do got to win to fill the seats. But again, there's a lag. It's a year lag. Single game tickets are a tough way to fill a stadium in December. Yeah. People just don't commit to that. You'll have some walk up and some single games that you'll sell, and that's nice. But their base was far too low. They need a bigger base. You need an off season to build a base. That's why it's looked the way it's looked the last few weeks, and it's going to look the way it looks in Oscar. Remember back in 11, they had to go BOGO to fill the stadium against that game against Baltimore?
That's right.
Was like a win and get in. And maybe that's what they need to do. Maybe they need to drop a BOGO on us. You know? At this point, that's just the way it is. I don't hold it against fans at all. I don't hold it against the team.
No.
I just think it's just the state of where they're at in trying to rebuild from the mess. In terms of tickets, they've rebuilt it on the field, but the tickets are going to be next year. And I think next year you'll see very close to capacity stadiums that don't require opposing teams coming in to fill it out. Mm-hmm. So, or early season games where you can count a little bit more on the weather. I don't know about you, Jay. We get to sit in the press box. Sitting out there does not look fun most December 26ths.
Rain in the forecast for this one. Obviously, still 5 days away, but yeah, that is a cold rain is not a fun way to watch a football game.
No. Mo will be out there.
He
doesn't mind the elements. He's out there. So let's take the second. Let's go to our good friend Mo Egger. And it's time. I think we got some good stuff today for this. What's up, Mo?
How are we doing, guys?
Doing well.
Doing excellent. Let's dive in your tweets. There's a couple. Well, one I'm pretty excited about, but we'll get to that. The other one, Jay, I guess you go ahead and give me. We got stats on Mo this week. How'd we do?
They're sad stats.
What?
Only 51 tweets.
Oh my!
Wow! Really?
Yeah.
You've got to do better, Mo.
Had not a lot going on Friday and Saturday, I guess. But okay.
I like to think that just means you're spending more time with your family, and that's important.
There's some validity to that. Yeah, there actually is some validity to that. That I've tried more and more when I'm around them to not have my phone with me. So
It's hard to do.
It is very hard to do.
Okay, I've got. We'll start here. We'll start here with the standard standard timing.
Okay.
7:16 p.m. on December 19th, Sunday.
Uh-huh.
I liked it. Simple. Survive in advance.
Original.
With the proper dot, dot, dot on the end of it. But I mean, really, that is the story of Sunday. So we can have a lot of fun breaking down all kinds of decisions and developments and who's playing well and who's not and what it means. Survive in advance. I'm with you, man. We've reached win a tilt season, as we like to call it around here.
Yeah, I mean, we're to the point where how they do it matters less than whether they do it. And look, I even said in a tweet maybe an hour or so later that game on Sunday was a talk show host dream, at least from my perspective, because they did win. And yet there were a lot of different mechanics to talk about. You know, obviously the Zach Taylor decision on 3rd and 8, which evoked memories of last week, and everybody had an opinion on that. And that's fun to talk about, but it's more fun to talk about such things when the team is winning. But yeah, I mean, as perhaps frustrating as that game was, and as much as it illustrated this team's early game offensive issues, they just needed a win. They needed a win in whatever form they could get it. And if you take a look at, you know, everything that happened around them with the Browns last night, the Ravens on Sunday afternoon, and the polarizing and controversial, I guess, manner in which they lost to the Packers. Everything's right in front of them because they found a way to win a football game that for a while on Sunday, it felt like they weren't going to win. And, you know, they did it with a game plan that I really liked, which was, all right, fine. We don't have to win a shootout. We're not going to ask Joe Burrow to drop back 45 times behind an offensive line we don't trust. We're just going to figure out a way to get this done. And they did it with some guys on defense who made some huge plays, some guys on defense that you don't expect to make huge plays that did. And the result was an extraordinarily crucial victory that has vaulted this team into a position that none of us could have imagined back in August. If you're a Bengals fan, I don't know how you're not doing cartwheels about that, because I certainly am. I'm not literally doing cartwheels because I can't, but metaphorically, in my brain at least, I'm doing cartwheels.
I'd kind of like you to do a cartwheel right now, actually. Like, we've got the video record going.
Call 911 now, if you don't mind, and I'll try.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
I mean, you said it doesn't matter how they win at this point. I think it almost does matter winning the way they did. And Paul kind of wrote about this where, you know, if they're going to get in the playoffs and they're going to advance in the playoffs, you're going to have to do what they did in that game. You're going to have to lean on your defense. You're going to have to come from behind and you're going to have to win the turnover battle. And yeah, it wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing game to watch, but I would argue it was more encouraging than frustrating to see them win a game that way against. Yeah. It's not a great Denver team, but it was a team with a winning record with everything on the line. So I put that more in the impressive win than the ugly just got it done category.
Yeah, somebody tweeted on Sunday night that ugly is turning the ball over a bunch of times, falling behind 24-0 like they did against the Chargers. This to me wasn't ugly. This was an example of a well-rounded team in which one area might not have been at its best, but the other picked it up. And, you know, to me, there were two themes. Number one was, and that's not a great Denver team offensively by any stretch of the imagination. But if I would have said to you before the season started, this team with a playoff berth sort of in front of it is going to win a game in which it only scores 15 points on the road, you would have said you're nuts because this defense isn't going to be good enough. And yet they had guys step up and make plays. And also, you guys have both talked about this team's biggest opponent in recent weeks has been itself with all the turnovers. Here's what can happen when you play mistake-free football. As cliche and as somewhat conservative as it sounds for somebody like me who loves aggressive, progressive, high-scoring football, it's true. It's true. If this team doesn't turn the football over, if we don't have muffed punts, if we don't have the running back dropping a ball and it being run back, if we don't have poor decision-making by the quarterback that results in an interception, this team's going to be okay. And that's what this was. They were more explosive at times against San Francisco, but they had to be because they killed themselves with turnovers. They were explosive at times against the Chargers, but it went for naught because they killed themselves with turnovers. this was clean football. Clean football is not ugly football. Clean football is effective football. What this team did on Sunday was effective. Now, do they have to figure out ways to get more out of their offense? Do they have to figure out ways to get Chase and Higgins to get some separation? I never thought I'd see Joe Burrow have as many coverage sacks or coverage hits as he did on Sunday. Yes. Chances are they're going to have to score more than 15 points to win some of these games they have in front of them. And certainly if they're going to advance, if they get to the postseason, but that wasn't ugly football. That was complimentary football, to borrow a term that Luke Fickell always uses. And it was an example of what this team can be if it doesn't get in its own way. And now here we are. They win their last two division games. They're AFC North champs. Who would have thunk it just a couple of weeks ago, much less before the season?
That's it. Yeah. I mean, that's their model to winning. I think we talk so much about learning who they are and finding their identity. I mean, we know their traits. We know who they are at this point. When they play, they have enough talent. They are as talented, if not more talented, than every team they step on the field with. That's not been the issue. It's not a matter of not having the horses. It's a matter of a team that is kind of young and sloppy at times. And so when they're not that, it's usually enough, or at least it's enough to have them right there where Joe Burrow can lift them at the end. And it's just a matter of them not doing that. And when they play games where they're not, no matter what it looks like, or you don't have to put up a ton of points. I mean, that's how anybody has to beat Denver right now. They have a great defense.
Yeah.
They have a great defense with a great secondary and a defensive head coach who's one of the best defensive minds of our current era. Like, that's how you have to beat Denver. That's what it looks like when teams do. Don't be ashamed of that.
And it was also a testament to some of the roster building. I mean, you know, I said on our show yesterday with Tony Pike, I don't know who's going to win the NFL Executive of the Year award, but if this team makes the postseason, you've got to consider Duke just for some of the personnel moves that he's made. You know, here's Evan McPherson banging home a 58-yard field goal in large part because I really am still not sure I know what Vic Fangio was doing at the end of the first half, but like that was a move that a lot of people panned, and it's paid off time and again, and it paid off again on Sunday. Larry Ogunjobi, and I know DJ Reader was an acquisition prior to last season, but a couple of guys that have worked out, the Trey Hendrickson thing, man. Trey Hendrickson is having one of the finest seasons of any Bengals pass rusher of my lifetime. That was a free agency move that a lot of people were skeptical about. The way they've, you know, Logan Wilson didn't play these last two games, but Logan Wilson's impact as a draft pick, the decision to go ahead and take Jamar Chase, Khalid Kareem making one of the biggest plays of the season and then getting rewarded with a cart ride. There were so many things, so many guys that stepped up and make plays where you're like, yep, that was the result of a decision by the front office that when the decision was made, we wondered if it was the right decision. That should be talked about more than, well, they only scored 15 points and Burrow didn't throw it on 3rd and 8 and Zach Taylor's a dummy and oh my God, they're doomed. If you're going to win 9, 10, 11, 12 games in this league, they're not all going to be masterpieces. Sometimes you're going to have to grind one out. I think you can look at every really good team in the recent history of this league and you can find a game in which, you know what, everything didn't work and they didn't win the game the way people thought. And yet, they figured out a way to score more points than the other team. That is the mark of a champion. And I'm not telling you the Bengals are going to be champions, but that was not insignificant what I saw on Sunday. And it sure as hell, for my money, wasn't ugly. I'm 44 years old. I've watched 3.5 decades of ugly Bengals games. That on Sunday was not ugly.
Ask the Kansas City Chiefs how they're winning this year. Are they winning ugly? A team that's won pretty for years is winning with defense and not scoring a ton of points. And they've been doing that all season long. And they're the front runner in the AFC right now. You know, and nobody's talking about, maybe they are in Kansas City, but nobody's talking about why aren't the Chiefs putting up 45 points? No, they're talking about how they're number one seed and looking great. And by the way, to add on to the Duke Tobin discussion, how about we talk about everyone that played in the secondary? And Chidobe Awuzie did not. Mike Hilton. Eli Apple, you know, I mean, these are decisions. They seem, maybe Apple seemed like a small one at the time, but now, I mean, we're going to talk about how he's probably going to hold down the starting role and Trey Waynes will be the backup because you make those right calls, you see those right fits, and you can fill out the depth of a roster that you didn't know if you'd have enough depth on.
And you mentioned winning ugly. The Patriots go to Buffalo in a swirling wind. Mac Jones attempts three passes. And every morning, the next morning, every single one of those shows where people scream at each other about sports, they were like, well, see, this is why Belichick's a genius. And I'm like, he's a genius because he chose to not pass the ball in a swirling wind. And like, well, then I'm a genius. But it was modify the game plan based on the conditions and the opponent and just figure out a way to get it done. Just figure out a way to get it done. And with Bill Belichick and the Patriots, it's, wow, that is a testament to that organization and the genius of that coach. Why can't some of those same things apply here? Because they should. And look, I have not been shy in criticizing Zach Taylor when I think he deserves it, and certainly not shy about criticizing this team when I feel like they deserve it. This team didn't deserve any of that. And they didn't play great. But the mark, a really good team is when it wins in spite of instead of loses because of. And this team on Sunday won in spite of, and they've put themselves in a really good spot here with three games to go.
You know, you mentioned morning talk shows. I couldn't help but think of you when I was driving to the airport yesterday morning, because Denver sports talk was, oh my gosh. It was, you know, it's like in Cincinnati. First of all, I wonder, do you ever, when you go to road games, do you listen to, or when you travel at all, do you listen to local sports talk?
And yeah. So I'm a radio nerd. Okay. I listen to a lot of local sports talk just here from other parts of the country because A, there's a lot of shows that I really like. B, I like the medium. C, I love stealing ideas. And D, you know, I just sometimes it's healthy. And I started doing this a lot when Dusty Baker was the Reds manager, and people would say, man, only in Cincinnati do people criticize the manager. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to listen to St. Louis sports talk radio. And Tony La Russa was there, and the criticisms are always the same. So yes, for a lot of different reasons, I listen to a lot of different local sports talk radio. And by the way, Denver has one of the best in the afternoon in Eric Goodman, milehighsports.com, 4 to 6 Mountain Time.
The angst was so high, and I guess it makes sense. We're in Cincinnati. People are kind of used to that type of thing. And whereas in Denver, they've won a Super Bowl recently, and it was Armageddon. I was just chuckling to myself the whole drive to the airport because they were just beside themselves.
I mean, but despite the history, they're in a markedly similar situation to the Bengals. I mean, last time they went to the playoffs, 2015, you know, you're talking about a third year of a head coach who hasn't given them the success that they've want, and middling here in the, I mean, two teams in such the same spot, which is kind of remarkable how the tone is different maybe here compared to there. I don't want to get bogged down in that because I have this that I need to talk to Mo about. I just appreciated your approach is all it is. And it was from 9:19 a.m., which early, I appreciate the early rise on this one, December 16th. And that was just a picture of Urban Meyer hawking Bob Evans. He's got his red Bob Evans polo on and his Bob Evans coffee mug. And he's got that bad smile. And that's all you sent. Like, you had no comment. You didn't want to touch the big story of the day. You just had Urban Meyer in Bob Evans gear. And I thought that was a genius approach to the situation. Thank you.
Sometimes, like, you just want to be a part of what everybody's talking about, but you have nothing new to say. And if you remember, right before the scandal that resulted in him missing three games at Ohio State, he partnered with Bob Evans to become the head breakfast coach. I don't know why I found that so humorous. I love Bob Evans. My late grandmother and I ate at Bob Evans every single week. So it's no knock on, I could eat Bob Evans right now, but I was amused. I don't know why it made me laugh, but so that photo was part of the campaign. And you know, I mean, immediately you knew how this was going to unfold. There was going to be talk of like, well, is he done? Can he ever be redeemed? Is he going to have a shot at redemption? Does he go back to college? Where's Urban going to surface? And I wanted to remind people that there is perhaps a job waiting for him at
it's breakfast coach
Bob Evans down on the farm. Yes.
While we're talking breakfast, can you give a review of another photo you posted? How were the Skyline breakfast enchiladas? Because that looks great.
They were phenomenal. We ran out of aluminum foil in my house. So this might have made a difference. Yeah, I don't know. I ran out of aluminum foil. So they were really good. I left them in the oven maybe a little bit too long because the tops of the shells were a little bit too hard. And I probably should have put more onions in them because I love onions. But yeah, they were bang up. And my daughter, I heated the last two up this morning. She ate about a third of one. And for her to eat a third of anything that's not a chocolate chip cookie is remarkable. So yeah, the Skyline Chili breakfast enchiladas were a hit. I will make them again. But the next time I'll have aluminum foil.
Yeah, probably don't recommend every day for breakfast.
No.
I mean, it's not going to be your standard cereal, you know.
No, I mean, it did take about 45 minutes to make. So, I mean, yeah, you know, you roll out of bed on a Tuesday morning, you know, when you can pour a bowl of Cocoa Puffs. I mean, you're not going to instead choose to, you know, go through this long elaborate process. But like in my house, we all do on Christmas morning, do a nice brunch after Santa comes. So we're going to make them again. With mimosas and Bloody Marys, different.
So we can handle Christmas
breakfast, yes. Cocktails. Oh yeah, so we can handle the coming storm of family members. But yeah, they were very, very good.
Awesome, I love it. Well, I appreciate it. We'll keep an eye out to see if Urban does surface as Bob Evans breakfast coach. I really look forward to that. And Mo, I also look forward to meeting you in the new studio this afternoon.
Oh, this could be this
from thing, 3 to 4.
I have no idea what we're in for. First show in the new studio. I mean,
it'll go well. I'm positive everything will go well.
We did our show. Tony and I at Twin Peaks in Florence, but it was produced from the new studios in Kenwood, and it was a disaster. And that's nobody's fault. These things just sort of happen when you move, but it was a disaster.
Well, I look forward to that, and I like disasters. So I will see you this afternoon. Thanks, Mo.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. Always great to catch up with Mo. And I could hold down that Bob Evans breakfast coach job until Urban wants to come back and take it. I think I'd be pretty good.
I want to ask a favor. If anybody out there has Photoshop skills, can you put Urban in an Arby's uniform for me? I might just frame it as an Ohio State fan. And an Arby's fan, obviously. That would be great if someone could do that.
That's fantastic. I'm not going to touch the idea of Urban working at Arby's. There's too many jokes there. All right, let's recap. Jay, you had some stats I wanted to make sure that we got to. We talked a little bit about perception and where they're at compared to where we thought they would be. You went back last January and looked at the odds of any team going from worst to first and how often that happened, because it does happen. And the odds of the Bengals would be the one to do it. What did that say? Can we revisit that for a second?
Yeah, what it was is I was looking at how often teams go from last place just to the playoffs, and it had happened in 16 of the 18 previous years. And so I contacted all the beat writers from The Athletic, from all the teams that finished last year, and asked them, you know, why will your team make the playoffs? Why won't your team make the playoffs next year? And then I asked our friends at betonline.ag if they would come up with some odds for me. And so the one was, will a 2020 last place team win its division in 2021? And yes was the favorite, -180. And no was +140. I don't know if we're going to see any of these teams win the division, but I think some of them are going to make the playoffs. And I asked for odds on making the playoffs. They gave me odds on winning the division. And it was, if a 2020 last place team does win its division in 2021, which one will it be? Obviously, there's 8 teams that finished last year. The Bengals had the 5th best odds. They were 8-1. The 49ers were 2-1. The Eagles were 3-1, which makes sense because that division had a losing record last year. The Falcons were 5-1. The Jaguars were actually 6-1. The Jaguars had better odds of winning the AFC South this year than the Bengals did of winning the NFC North. And then the Jets were 8-1. The Broncos were 10-1. And the Lions were 12-1. Right now, maybe the 49ers could do it, but I mean, it feels like there's a real shot the Bengals do this, and I don't know if this was something they came up with for me. I don't know if they actually posted it. I wonder if anybody got in on an 8-1 for the Bengals to win the division.
Well, I think you could have caught bigger odds than that if you just were trying to bet them outright
true. At
the beginning of the season. I think they were about 20. So you definitely could go. We did an odds show back during our break before the season started. That was all the odds for the season. And if I remember correctly, you could get the Bengals at 22-1 at that point in time to win the North. And I think we were just trying to speculate on what the odds would be for them to finish above the Steelers at that point. And so we'll see how that all plays out. Of course, like we said, a long way to go. We do need to recap Growler Bet from last week. Growler Bet was, what will Joe Burrow's fourth quarter passer rating be? As we discussed the way he torched the 49ers previously. Joe Burrow threw four passes in the fourth quarter against Denver. He was 3 of 4 for 23 yards. Really, only one of them mattered. He basically threw one pass in the fourth quarter, and that was the 15-yard completion to Tyler Boyd, which was huge. That made for a rating of 88.5. We did not have a winner this week. On Twitter, T Faith had 86.7. On email, Brian Aubrey had 90.3. Each were exactly in opposite directions, 1.8 points away from being correct, which is so close, but still nothing for you. The delicious 50 West beer, which I have tasted the OU Oh Yeah beer, Jay.
How was it?
I went directly to the source, drank it out of the tap. They didn't have any more cans left up there. They've been hard to find. There's a few places apparently it's still left at. It's the one based off the Hot Nut at Tony's. And I was informed by Optimistic Bobby that when they did the release party, they went and did it at OU at Tony's, and he sat with Tony at Tony's bar and drank this like 11.7% ABV for like 3 hours. And Tony told him all his old Tony stories, and he said it was everything you could ever imagine it would be, including a massive struggle the next day. But sounded like a good time as far as I could tell. I'm sure Tony has told those stories.
Yes.
Hundreds and hundreds of times, but I would pay. If you did, you know, they'll do those like charity auctions where you pay for experiences. You auction off an experience. That'd be an auction off experience for me.
Yeah.
Sit next to Tony for 3 hours, drink OU Oh Yeah, and let him just tell all the stories that he always tells.
My favorite Tony story is it was my birthday. It was my 20th birthday, and we went there, and I was gone. I wasn't so gone that I don't remember this, but I knew I was done, and someone bought me a shot of Rumpelman's, and it looked like I threw it down, but I threw it over my shoulder. I did not do it, and who knows? I probably soaked somebody, but I was not going to do that shot. I knew there was no way I was going to get home if I did that shot.
Wrong with a shot of Rumpelmintz to close your night, Jay. Now, you know how I disagree. Feel about that.
With the growler bet, though, this is important. I had 100.1. You had 113. I won. I am now in the lead 6-5. First time all year I've had the lead.
Late charge by you. Plenty of season left. Plenty of season is left. There is. 3 important games. I feel good. I'm going to take it a little bit more seriously this week. I'm going to give it more thought.
Maybe more than three
run,
games.
Run, pass, or boot. Last week, we were talking about what the final score of the game would be because the Bengals have only played two types of games all year. Games that have been decided by exactly 3 points or games that have been decided by 2 TDs or more. So we said run, pass, or boot. What was it going to be? Exactly 3 points, 2 TDs or more, or somewhere in between for the first time all year. And I'll be GD'd what happened for the first time all season. They played one in between, and I had picked that. I had booted that. You had passed on that. I take the L. I don't like that.
Only the second time this year that the one that hit was your boot. And we both shared it back in the Detroit game. It was the one about what would be longer, that Swift's receiving yards, the longest completion, or McPherson's longest field goal. And we both booted the completion and Joe Burrow hit the long one to Ja'Marr Chase, and we both failed on that one.
So we, what is that? Where are we at with that on the season?
Well, you have 6 runs that hit, and I have 5 runs that hit. So I guess technically you're in the lead there.
Close competitions this year. Yes. Nobody's running away with anything. So, all right. We'll, of course, have more growler bets and run passer boots when we come back on Thursday's episode for you, the new ones for this week in this big game against Baltimore. We'll have the walkout for you on Sunday and then the live room again for you on Monday in the lunch hour. We will likely be back at noon, but just keep an eye out. We'll update you on that after the walkout and online and everywhere else. And you can always hop on the site and you get a notification if you follow the Bengals on the site as a subscriber when that thing starts anyway. So you'll always know what's going on. Thanks to everybody that has been joining those. Outside of that, we'll be back with a big preview show. Jeff Zrebeck will join us to talk about the chaos that continues to be happening in Baltimore, including like the rise of Tyler Huntley. That is the latest storyline of, hey, this Tyler Huntley guy is actually kind of good. I was going through the transcript yesterday and the question was asked. I mean, I know Lamar's great, but like if he's not really all the way healthy, does Huntley allow you to kind of hold him out another week? And it was like, wow, we've reached this portion of the program. Then maybe you hold Lamar out and let Huntley go get him again. But it's true. Their offense had been struggling mightily. And now Huntley's come in and they've put up some points in a couple of weeks. So maybe
if I'm power ranking AFC North quarterbacks, Huntley might be number 3 right now. I got him ahead of Ben and Baker.
Well, certainly ahead of the Browns. I'm really really looking forward to the Zach Jackson conversation.
Oh, yes.
Week 18. That's all I'll say about that. What a year it has been for them in Cleveland. And after the unbelievable that they were right there at the end and damn near beat the Raiders with the cast of cast-offs that they had out there, including Nick Mullins, who did pretty well, all things considered. Unbelievable. What a year. If you end up looking back on this season and the fact that the Browns had half their team missed because of COVID and their coach and 2 quarterbacks ends up being the difference, it's just unbelievable, right? It's just unbelievable. And now the NFL's hands off targeted testing, which apparently means just a couple random tests show up now. I don't know.
Which is great news for the Bengals because they have not had that outbreak yet.
Now that apparently there's just a couple rando tests that show up, you don't have to worry as much unless guys actually get sick, but whatever. Here we go. Down the stretch we go. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you next time on Hear That Podcast Ground. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.